Okay, this one's good. A little bit of a longer video. I did a video recently on psychosomatic illness, and I got a couple of questions back relating to that video, which I'm going to answer now. This is going to be a little bit of a longer video. You might want to go and play a computer game and leave this just running the audio in the background. I don't know. It is going to take a little bit longer. Somebody asked me about eczema. What's eczema usually relate to? And then he says, I know I could go and look it up, but I want your opinion. Eczema, to me, relates to your shield against reality, which is your skin. Eczema is a breakdown of the skin, as your shield of reality, is your shield to the external reality is breaking down. Therefore, it's porous. Now, in psychological terms, if we say that somebody's ego or their character or their personality is porous, that means that they have bad boundary setting issues. Gentlemen with eczema, are you bad at setting boundaries? Or do you feel at some point that in your life you've been traumatized by somebody else encroaching repeatedly on your boundaries that has worn away your skin, your thick... You know, if you say somebody is thick-skinned, you know, I'm quite thick-skinned, it means they have a certain attitude, a certain character. Could we use that description to describe you, sir? If not, is there some balancing in the personality? Are there some areas you could do with working on and improving on to build a thicker skin? That's where I would go with it. And I don't really blame you for wanting to ask somebody rather than just asking Google. The thing is with Google is you're going to get loads of answers, but they're not what we would call pre-qualified answers. The reason why people go to certain instructors or certain coaches about issues is because they pre-qualify the instructor or the coach. Like, people are still making tons of money teaching strength training, and there's so much strength training advice out there for free that you could start reading it now, spend the rest of your life trying to read it, and you probably wouldn't even get like 5% through it all. But And I know that, and I work online, so I know how to use Google, and I know how to check sites, and I know how to find good people, but I still ask one guy, who's a mate of mine, what his opinion is on everything, because he's pre-qualified. He's my guru, he's my coach, he's the guy with the experience in that field, plus I know he's put his body through the paces first. So I guess, on some unconscious level, with you guys, you might be thinking, well, this guy has been through his own traumas, so he probably understands some of this stuff to a degree. Let's get on with the next question, which is a longer question, has a lot of good stuff in it though that is going to pertain to many people. So, it says, hi Richie, thank you for replying and making the video. I hope I don't want to take up too much of your time. How terribly British of me. Yes it is. I just wanted to respond to some of your ideas. If you have the time and the inclination, I would love to see what you think, but I appreciate you're not a free counselling service. Yes, I am. This site, the YouTube channel, is a free counselling service. Okay, I've always felt a lot of pressure to be successful. My parents have always been supportive without being pushy. That said, they've always had massive expectations of who I will become, and I've always felt that. Okay, so you say your parents have been supportive without being pushy, but they've always had massive expectations. So, what happens in therapy? And I've been on the other side of the therapeutic process, so I observed this in myself, and I was lucky enough to have a very good counsellor, a lady from the world called Nicola Forshaw, who is a teacher of counsellors. She's brilliant. And we were discussing certain childhood traumas and stuff to do with parenting, and I was very defensive of my parents, as most people are. Thou shalt honour thy father and mother. It's a very natural instinct to get defensive of our parents. But it doesn't help. It can actually hold certain traumas in place because you're effectively denying the trauma. And I'm not encouraging victim mentality here. I'm encouraging a realistic facing up to the reality of certain situations. So you say, my parents were supportive in everything I did without being pushy. You sound like like somebody who's living in communist Russia or some kind of fascist state going, the government give me everything I need. You know, you're towing the party line, which you've probably done since you were a young girl, because you were always wanting to be a good little girl for your mummy and daddy, which is normal, but now you have to realise as an adult you're carrying that good little girl around inside of you, and there is a disconnect and a conflict between your internal reality, the good little girl, who grew up with certain paradigms and certain belief systems and the requirements of the external reality in which you find yourself today. And that gap is what is causing you pain. But we can heal that gap with a bit of time and a bit of effort and a bit of understanding. So they always had massive expectations of me. I'm a wordy guy. I'm a linguist. Neuro-linguistic programming. Your words reveal your map of reality. Your adjective that you chose was, my parents always had massive expectations of me. But they weren't pushy. You should check out the video I did on double binds and catch-22s and victims of torture. It's impossible for parents to have massive expectations of a child without being pushy. Nobody should have massive expectations of a child. A child should be expected to be a child. So whilst I'm not going to say, hey, your mum and dad were abusive, which would make you get defensive of your mum and dad, I'm going to say maybe your parents didn't allow you to be as much of a child as they could, and maybe they pushed some of their own expectations for their own lives onto you. That would give a child an experience of an expectation that was massive, because it's an adult's expectation in a child's reality. See how my throat just constricted just then? Massive expectation, throat constriction. I'm now entering your reality psychically via the internet. and now I'm experiencing your symptoms. Throat constriction. I always felt a lot of pressure to be successful. Okay, so you didn't just grow up in an environment where your parents were supportive and not pushy. You grew up in a pushy environment. There's different ways of being pushy. I could actively say to my child, come on, I want you to do well at school and to compete and to be an athlete and to get straight A's and to be, you know, and to hothouse the child aggressively. But there's also passive-aggressive tactics. There's also, you know, meta-communication that we can use to guide children's behaviour. We can, what's an alternative to an aggressive-aggressive tactic? There's a passive-aggressive tactic, sulking. I'm genuinely getting a throat constriction right now. Sulking is something that people will do to control their children and to control each other, making it clear that they're not happy. I have a female friend who I hang around with, and she started talking to me sometimes in girlfriend mode. So we have these weird conversations that I haven't had since I've been out of a relationship for like 4 years, so it's freaky for me, and she's just a mate. She'll say to me, where do you want to eat? And we've got five options where we are, and I'll say, I want to eat at option number two, and she'll do this. And I'm like, if you have a preference to where we go and fucking eat, then just say it. Just say what you want. Don't fucking pull a face. Which then is a really ridiculous conversation for two friends to be having. You shouldn't manipulate to get what you want. And if your parents have manipulated you, I know that this is going to upset some people and they're going to throw rotten fruit at me. It's abuse. It's not abuse where they put cigarettes out on you or pulled your fingernails out, but it's abuse because it's not clear, direct communication. Children need clear, direct, honest communication. Clear, direct boundaries. Children need justice. They need the system to be the same at the front end as at the back end. They need everybody. If children live in an unfair environment, it fucks them up. They grow up weird and twisted. So you were under a lot of pressure, and I would say that whilst your parents might not have been abusive per se, let's say that perhaps some of their behaviours were suboptimal in terms of parenting and providing you with a supportive environment. Nothing negative, traumatic has happened to me as a result of success or fame. To be honest, I haven't really achieved any sort of fame. But since leaving university, I've had the sense of being a failure and not doing well enough. Even though I've set up my own vocal coaching business and continue to make progress with my band and other music projects, nothing is ever enough, and I can't seem to acknowledge my own achievements, even when everyone around me does. You're suffering from the Asian problem. I do quite a bit of counselling, coaching type work with Asian people. Well, I live in Asia, so you know, usually Chinese people. And Chinese parents tend to fit the stereotype of Chinese parents. You know, there's a lot of demands on their kids. So, This is why I thought this video would take a while. Okay. There's a syndrome that's called overachiever syndrome. And there are two different scenarios that can create overachiever syndrome, which is a syndrome whereby no matter what you do, it never feels like enough. And I've suffered from this, so I know exactly what it feels like. Scenario number one that creates it is your parents are extremely pushy and they leave you with an implicit doctrine or a pattern that's imprinted into the unconscious and into the brain that nothing you do is good enough. When I train people and when I work with kids, or I used to work with kids, I praise very freely and very readily and very quickly for small things. Because I want the brain to associate pleasure to doing well. And I also know that the key to human happiness is progress. So if people feel, if they're learning for an exam and they feel like, hey, I'm doing really good, then their behavior becomes part of their self-image and their identity. Hey, you're working really well there. Your concentration actually is impressive. You've sat there and you've concentrated on one topic for, I don't know, whatever it is, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. This is what success is all about, and you're doing a really good job, and I hope you keep going. These simple little things was why I had so much success with the kids in the schools, because I understood these simple little bits of psychology. When you never praise a child no matter what they do, then they imprint the meta program. When I say meta communication, it's the communication behind the communication. Meta program, it's the programming behind the programming. There is an implicit doctrine that is being given to you, which is nothing you ever do will ever be good enough. And then you walk away from your childhood as an adult, running that program inside the computer software of your brain. Nothing I ever do is good enough. Nothing I ever do is good enough. And then we, with overachiever syndrome, need to do more and more and more and more and more to try and prove to ourselves that we have value. But actually what we're really trying to do is the inner child is trying to prove to mummy and daddy, who might not even be around, who might be dead, but the imprint is still, the ghost is still in the machine, they're trying to prove to mummy and daddy that they are valid and that what they're doing is worthwhile. And what we're seeking is that praise that we never had as children, that moment of the parent turning to the child and saying, well done, I'm proud of you. That's what the overachiever syndrome is. And it can also come from children of narcissistic parents, who don't pay any attention whatsoever. So you're either really, really pushy as a parent and say, achieve, achieve, achieve. You got straight A's? It's just expected of you. That's the Asian syndrome. You have the other syndrome, the baby boomer syndrome. My parents were classic baby boomers. The narcissistic personality disorder, where they just never had time for anything that I did. Weren't interested, never attended a single parents meeting at school. We were just expected to get the grades. That then creates this desire to do more. I must please mummy and daddy. I must do something to get their approval, because parental approval is crucial to a child. It's crucial. They just need it like they need water and food. So it was kind of gratifying, but also saddening when I would go around the schools and I realized that. And I adopted that parental role model somewhere, kind of like, but still, you know, trying to be hip and cool and down with the kids. So sort of like a big brother role, to see how pathetically, and I mean pathetic in the purest, in the purest sense of the word pathos, how pathetically grateful these kids were to just have somebody say to them, well done. And you see them light up, you see the neurology change, their state changes, their face flushes, some of them even tear up, but they're tough, you know, little hoods from, you know, 17 years old, and they talk, you know, all innit blood and man ting ting and all that. Too many men, too many, many men. Nothing negative or traumatic has happened to me, you said. And I say, no, your childhood was negative and traumatic, but you didn't have your fingers chopped off. Well, okay. You need to go and see the film Good Will Hunting. Everybody should watch that film. It's a very, very good film. But you were traumatised and your childhood was negative. So you've set up your own business, nothing is ever good enough, and I can't seem to acknowledge my own achievements, even when everyone around me does. Really need mommy and daddy to acknowledge your achievements, or you do therapy work where you parent yourself and you console yourself and you kind of let your parents go as human beings. You say, okay, you spawned me biologically. Well done, spunk machine. Well done, egg lady. Damn you, vile woman. You let them go as parents. You let them go as parental figures, and then you more consciously parent yourself, because this is all internal. You're a grown woman. You don't really need somebody to parent you. Well, sometimes you might. I don't know. But yeah, that's why even when everybody acknowledges your achievements, you can't. You have overachiever syndrome. Very common. Common with pushy parents, as in Asia, you've got the Asian syndrome. More common in England, in my experience, with parents who were baby boomers who had narcissistic personality disorder and just fucking ignored their kids. I'm not sure what the psychological analysis would be. Well, that's what I'm here for. But in my own words, my mum is pretty fucked up. And then you go on to describe her being riddled with illnesses. Good word, riddled. She's riddled. IBS, allergies, skin conditions, arthritis, you name it, she's got it. She has never been physically abusive, but is manipulative, controlling, deceitful, attention-seeking, and an alcoholic. It's a funny thing that we have in our cultural operating system where we think that physical abuse is more damaging than mental abuse. It is not. I have counselled victims of relationship trauma, domestic violence, and I've counselled the victims of violent crime. And I can tell you that if the ego is non-porous and there are boundaries set, people can suffer horrendous injuries as a result of violent crime, pick themselves up and walk away within a month to 6 weeks with no major lasting psychological symptoms, if the ego is not porous, if there are boundaries, psychological boundaries in place. Nobody walks away from psychological abuse, because psychological abuse pokes those porous holes into the ego and into the personality, and it actually weakens your ability to fight off. If you think of it as like a psychological immune system that mirrors the physical immune system, it's like having psychological AIDS. Your ability for the white blood cells to get out there and kill the viruses is really diminished, and all your little soldiers inside of you are all sick and crippled and fucked up. And so anything can attack you. And that's why the people who are the victims of psychological abuse very often continue the cycle, because as soon as the next abusive dickhead comes along and smells the symptoms in you, the parasite smells the symptoms in a potential host, it latches on and you don't stop it because you're porous. You don't have the boundaries there to do that. You're not strong enough to stop them. So, yeah, looks like your mother is probably suffering from narcissistic personality disorder and has developed a toxic personality. That is my diagnosis. My recommendation is that you limit contact with it. Nothing else seems to work. Nothing else I've come across seems to work. But limited contact, you get away from her, you create physical and psychological distance through time and space, and you build up some boundaries, some nice high walls, so that her issues don't become your issues, because she's your mummy. She's your model for how to be a woman in the world. Scary thought, right? And if you don't deliberately and consciously take control of your life's script, you run the risk of ending up like her. So you've got to be very, very careful of that. Looks like I need to change the battery on this video camera thing. Right, I'll stop, and then we'll go on to the next video in a moment. Okay. We've dipped our toe into the stream of poo. It gets worse. Now we need to go knee-deep into the plop. The psychological plop. But don't worry, we have on strong Wellington boots and an industrial level shower afterwards. So, I'm not sure what psychological analysis would be, but my mum is pretty fucked up. She's never been physically abusive, but is manipulative, controlling, deceitful, attention-seeking, and an alcoholic. You said that your parents were supportive. I don't think an alcoholic parent can ever truly be supportive. I hope I'm hammering this point enough. You need to start acclimatizing to the idea that you did not have an idyllic childhood, that your parents were perhaps not supportive, and that actually you've had it pretty tough, though you never had cigarettes put out on you or your fingernails ripped out. Which we can do for you if you think it'll help. I'm kidding! I could keep adding words, but I'm sure you get the picture. I do. She's riddled, IBS, allergies, skin conditions, arthritis. She's always stressed, negative about everything, always flapping about and trying to reel everyone around her in too. Sounds all too familiar. When I was a kid, I was her main instrument for attention, and I caught a lot of the brunt of when her neuroses got nasty, being blamed for things I didn't do, so my dad would tell me off. She told me she's had cancer when she was drunk once, and it wasn't true. She's told me lies about their financial situation to make me worry, even though she knows I get depressed and anxious, etc., etc., etc. Are you the oldest of your siblings? Are you an only child? That's a fairly pertinent question to ask at this point. It gives an insight into the psychological outlook that you've got. You sound like a responsibility taker. So that means, I'm guessing, you're the eldest of the siblings, but I don't know. Yeah, your mum's left a real mark there that would take some therapy to remove. So these the constriction of the voice and the anger and the rage, it would be extremely odd if you didn't have a huge wellspring of frustrated rage, I'm using the word deliberately, just blinding fucking fury, white hot fury to your mum that is inside of you somewhere that you can't own because you're a good little girl, and good little girls don't become blazing fucking mad with their mothers and want to beat them to death with a tire iron. That's not what good little girls do. So you're struggling with that rage, but when you repress any urge, any drive, sexual, psychological, emotional, physical, it goes somewhere. People bash Freud a lot. I used to bash Freud a lot, but these days I look again at Freud and I think, okay, take away the mum fucking and the dad fucking, which I think he probably just said that to be controversial and to get famous. I think it was a marketing ploy. The Oedipus and the Electra. I wish I could speak English. The Oedipus and the Electra complex, I think, were probably marketing ploys by Freud, who was making his money by being a controversial, psychologist who formed the basis of an entire new school. You know, he created psychoanalysis. So, to be Freudian for a second, I do think we need to look at the repression of the drive, because, as he pointed out, any drive that is repressed is going to express itself somewhere else, and if it is not expressed, then you will feel depressed, and you can go crazy. You'll go crazy doing shit like that. You imagine, I might have said this elsewhere, I'm senile, I ramble on, I'm kidding, I'm not really. I saw a zoo in Spain when I was a child, when I was about 10, and it was a dreadful, dreadful, shabby little zoo. I fucking hate zoos. There's nothing fun about it. I don't know why we take children to zoos. Anyway, this zoo in Spain, I used to live in Portugal, and we crossed the border one day to go to Spain. We got a boat over. I remember the river in between the two was full of these jellyfish, which are called the Portuguese Man of War, which is like one of the most poisonous jellyfish in the world. And if you fell in, you would die. You would be stung to death. And they were literally, there was some breeding thing on, this is the late 80s, and the sea was just full. You couldn't see a foot of sea without a jellyfish, super poisonous jellyfish. All this stuff is going into my mind as a 10-year-old. I was like, holy shit, this is really intense and threatening. Then we go to this fucking zoo. Not just a zoo, a fucking zoo. And they have this flea-bitten, scabby lion who's just lying there in the blazing sun where nowhere to shelter from, you know, from the sun, and looking fucking depressed. And that freaked me out. I was like, he doesn't look like a happy lion, like in the Disney cartoons. And the whole place was just morbid and dead energy and real vile. And I saw a fox in a cage. And it was jumping onto a bench and off the bench and onto the bench and off the bench and onto the bench and off the bench. And I stood there and I was looking at this and I was like, why is it doing that? And I said to my dad, why is it doing that? And he said, oh, it's probably trying to kill itself. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm so glad we came to this fucking zoo where animals are so miserable that they're trying to kill themselves. But that to me is a good shorthand. I always think of that. When I think of natural urges, I think of animals or children. Because, you know, children are also in our more primitive, primordial state. And I think of this poor fox, which should have been out in the woods, being a fox, doing fox stuff. I don't know what foxes do. And he was forced into this tiny cage. And the forcing inside the iron cage made him flip around and run around the place. And eventually he probably did kill himself. He was clearly going insane. That's what happens with us in our natural drives. When we cage them, they flip around and they bang against the cage walls. And you experience that as anxiety, as stress, and as pain. I'm not surprised you're anxious. In fact, if you contacted me with all this stuff and went, by the way, I feel great. My life is awesome. Life is just, I would have been like, wow, fuck. You should be coaching people. So, more than anything, you go on to say, she claimed that she had cancer when she didn't. She would tell your dad lies to get him to tell you off. This is all very classic passive-aggressive strategies of the narcissistic personality disorder. Nasty. Nasty stuff. And she would do it even though she knows I get depressed and anxious. Here's something that the children of baby boomers and the children of narcissists are shocked and heartbroken to learn. Your parents don't give a fuck. They'll watch you die. They'll literally... I've stood by and watched a baby boomer narcissist watch his son. And this is all in my opinion. This is not factual. This is Richie's opinion. The kid got cancer. The son got cancer. And died of this extremely rare form of cancer. And I believe it's because his father just vampirically used him. And even in his final moments when he was dying, leaving behind a daughter who was 11 months old and a young wife, his father refused to give him what he needed, refused to tell him that he loved him or that he appreciated him without him needing to. He had this kid, I'm saying kid, I was 27 when he passed away, he was 33. And I hadn't spoken to him for years and ended up counselling him through his death process, which is pretty fucking intense. But also not as dark as it sounds. It was actually quite... It was actually a very maturing experience. But they will watch you die because they don't have compassion. They don't think like normal human beings do. There's no limit. I've had relationships that mirrored my relationship with my parents, which is a very normal psychological thing to do. And I always felt like, well, there's going to be a limit. There's going to come a point where this person who professes to love me is going to see that what they're doing is extremely damaging and they'll stop. But there is no limit because you're not real to them. You're a thing. You're a prop in a play that stars them. That's all you are. She doesn't care that you get depressed and anxious. If she's genuinely got narcissistic personality syndrome, and really, what do I know? All I know is I'm just looking at pixels on the screen here, so I'm just making that suggestion to you. More than anything, I'm scared that I'm like her in some way. Well, that would make sense. And that these psychosomatic symptoms I experience are just a mirror of hers. But in so many ways I know that I'm not like her, hence my paranoia about somehow enjoying my suffering as she seems to. So, are you your parents? My God, I hope not. My father is a dreadful cunt. A truly, truly awful human being in many ways. And I don't believe in genetic determinism. That's quackery. Your genetics don't account. I personally don't think, and there is no evidence whatsoever for genetics determining your personality. Your genetics will determine lower level things like how you look and the propensity towards certain diseases and physical stuff, but it doesn't affect your personality. At the moment you're living a script that is guided, that is leading you towards being like her, but you're not like her. You're you. She's she. So that's one boundary that you can start laying down today, is that you are you, and I am I, and my shit is my shit, your shit is your shit. You take your shit away from me, I've got enough shit to deal with. And having those boundaries there, and actually literally saying that to her when she starts whinging and fucking carrying on in front of you, and being a wanker, a massive wanker, just saying, listen, I don't want to listen to your whinging. You have to do that. You don't have to be mean. You don't have to say you're a massive wanker, a guy on the internet told me. But you should say, something like, Mum, don't start. Or, really? Are you going to do it? Really? You're whinging? Okay, I'm bored now. I have to go, ta-ra, and then you just fucking walk off. You're not like her. You're not her. You're paranoid that you somehow enjoy your suffering. I don't sense in any... I'm very honest. As I'm sure you realise, I don't sense any enjoyment of your suffering here whatsoever. So, let's just throw that one out. As a result, I don't deal with stress very well. You don't deal with stress very well because you weren't trained how to deal with stress. You had no role model for dealing with stress. Your father was perhaps a little bit too passive, reading in between the lines. I'm guessing that because he must have known that his wife was a liar and that he was being manipulated into shouting at you when you're a little girl. But it sounds maybe like he was a bit too passive, not involved enough, and your mother is a flaming hot mess. No judgment. It's just, not dissing your mum, but, you know. stuff there is not so good. That's why you don't deal well with stress, not any other reason. But now I'm busy and more successful, I seem to just get angry and exhausted because you've got so much shit going on inside of you. So when external pressure meets internal pressure, something's going to give. You're so used to living with internal pressure, you don't even realise that you're in a fight with yourself all day, every day, all the fucking time. But you are. I know. I've lived through that. I know what that's like. One last thing, and please don't feel the need to respond to any or all of this unless you want to. Thank you very much, English lady. I'm dead chuffed you even responded and then made a long video on it. The reason why is because if the universe is holographic, your problem, your individual problem, the shape and pattern of your problems and your individual story will have within it stored everybody's problem. So therefore, by deduction, the solution to your individual problems will be the solution to everybody else's problems. So that's why it's worth doing. So I would obviously do it just to help you as an individual as well. Massive good karma points for me, straight in the bank account of karma, but also because it helps other people too. Since I was a kid, I've been terrified of losing my family. I'm the youngest. Oh, you're not the oldest, you're the youngest. I was wrong. I remember really clearly on my 6th or 7th birthday being put to bed after what was presumably a lovely day with Jake and Kelly and stuff, cake and jelly and stuff, and bursting into hysterical tears. I'd realised that day that if everyone died in the order they were biologically supposed to, that I would be alone around the same time. Oh, full stop. Around the same time I watched The Lion King, embarrassing, for the first time, and you were 6. How's that embarrassing? Oh dude, I'm totally watching The Lion King, it's so lame. What should you be watching? Scarface? For the first time, I was so traumatised by the father dying that I kept creeping into my parents' bedroom to check they were still breathing. Disney films are a part of an Illuminati mind control conspiracy that sexualise children at an excessively early age via unconscious imprinting, and The Lion King has a very clear unconscious imprint. This isn't babble, you can look it up, it's right there on YouTube. Come on brain, don't let me down now. Subliminal message, Lion King. Subliminal means beneath the line, so you can only just see it, and right there in The Lion King, for no reason whatsoever, it says sex, but it says it for like 3 frames of a 24 frame a second film. The idea being that you register it unconsciously and not consciously. The death scene in The Lion King, I didn't watch The Lion King until I was a long time after it came out. I thought that was excessive. I thought it was traumatic. And I think it is deliberately seeking to traumatise children into a state of fear about losing their parents. If you actually sit back and watch, if you watch the Star Wars movies and the Disney cartoons from the 60s and 70s, there's a lot of heavy, heavy fucking mind control trauma shit going on in there that is really not suitable for kids. But If you can train a child to be terrified, they'll be terrified for life. If you can train a child to be obsessed with their Winkies, they'll be obsessed with their Winkies for life. Too obsessed with sex. People who are very sexualized and very scared are very submissive. People who are very sexualized, obviously these little people, these children, grow up into adults, right? It's very easy to sell to people who are over-sexualized. It's very easy to have your libido manipulated. So I think you were trauma-bonded by the Lion King, because that's what the Disney empire is setting out to do. Here's my tinfoil hat. I will take it off. I know that some people don't like it when I talk about that stuff, but it's true, so suck it the fuck up. Just kidding. Not really. So that was the Lion King's fault. But also you have the classic Freudian-termed abandonment issues, which all children do. And the sick thing about life is you get that when you're happy. If you have a happy childhood and you're happy with your parents, you're like, oh my God, this is awesome. But then you have to deal with, oh my God, they'll be dead one day. When you've cleared up your internal issues and you go on to a period of life where things are going well again, you will experience fear. Success is a fearful, because you have something to lose. When you have nothing to lose, there's nothing to be scared of. But when you have something to lose, you become scared. Presumably when you have kids, you'll be freaked out by the fact that you'll die one day and abandon them, and eventually they'll die and blah, blah, blah. So it's fear. You wrote terrified in block capital words, block capital letters, when you were six. I was terrified of losing my family. I have to admit, this fear is still with me, and I am ashamed to say I'm much more scared of my dad dying than almost anything in the world. Why? That's it, no more advice. You should sit with that and just be like, okay, why? You're a rational adult. Let's have a little think. Why are you so scared of your dad dying more than anything else in the world? And we need to come back to that in a second. The thoughts come to me at night as I'm trying to sleep, mostly, and I instantly start to cry. Sometimes I find myself imagining his funeral before I even have a chance to stop myself spiraling. I'm laughing, not because it's funny, because you're in pain and your pain is real. I'm laughing because you're torturing yourself with crazed imaginings. If you think about anything traumatic long enough, you can make yourself cry. And the only way that you can learn how to do this, and how I teach my clients how to do this, is try and get upset about something else and realize that your brain is capable of getting upset about anything if you spin it the right way. You're creating mental advertising inside your brain all the time. I teach NLP, so we look a lot at the videos your brain creates for itself. If you think about stroking a really beautiful kitten and sitting with the kitten and the kitten falling asleep on you for a while, and then you throw the kitten into a meat grinder, then you feel shock and fear and terror and horror and just awful. You know, you can imagine all kinds of dreadful things. Sometimes I find myself imagining his funeral before I even have a chance to stop myself spiraling. Next time you imagine that, I want you to become aware of how your mind is filming that. Is it a close-up shot of the coffin? Is it a long shot of the coffin? Is there sad music playing? If there is sad music playing, what's the sad music? First funeral I ever went to was my great auntie, and she died of cancer very, very young. And she was a wonderful person. She was a teacher, and she looked after me when I was first sent to boarding school, and they played Adagio for Strings at that funeral. I can't listen to it now, because I was so trauma-bonded to the experience of this funeral and that sound. And the second one I went to, which was equally traumatic, was my great-uncle Dick, who I'm named after. A fantastic character of a man. You know, we had one eye patch, and his right arm had been blown off in World War II. He was one of the first parachute regiment guys. And he was in a slip trench, and a mortar hit him in the head and didn't explode. So it hit him in the head, which gave him vision problems, so they gave him an eye patch and then took his arm off. He was the head teacher of a school, and most of what I learned about teaching kids, I learned from him. He had a very a strange approach, very, very loving, very compassionate, but very rigidly regimented and militaristic at the same time, which I find actually works quite well. But yeah, his funeral song was You'll Never Walk Alone, which is troublesome if you live in the Liverpool area to try and not listen to that song. But I want you to become aware of the music that you're playing inside your head when you make yourself cry alone at night. Imagining your dad's funeral. I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at you, madam. I'm laughing at the brain's capacity to torture itself. I mean, we really are sometimes our own worst enemies. I'm sure if I did that, I could probably get myself quite upset as well. I don't even like my dad. Just before my throat... Here's another thing you mentioned. It's very important. Just before this throat problem started 18 months ago, a family friend, my uncle, my auntie, my granddad, and an old boyfriend all died within about a year, 18 months of each other. Before this, the only person I'd known that died was my grandmother when I was 9, and I didn't really get it or feel that much, to be totally honest, because you were 9. So there's no compassion grown. You know, we all start as narcissists. If you want to know what it's like to be your mum, a true narcissist, go back to when you were like 5 or 6 years old, where you were the centre of everything. The sun didn't come up until you opened your eyes in the morning, because that's all you know. Slowly, 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 we develop compassion, or we're supposed to, and empathy for other human beings. So the reason you didn't feel anything is because you were just 9. Now, you suffer from anxiety. One of the first questions I always people who suffer from anxiety attacks, and I dealt with a guy just last week, a martial arts coach, who's suffering from anxiety attacks, is, did you have anybody close to you die young at any time recent or proportionate to the anxiety attack starting? One of my uncles died very, very quickly of lung cancer in 2010 at age 55. And four different people in that family, in the extended family unit, started to develop severe depression and anxiety attacks. The reason being that when somebody close to us dies and you had four people go, obviously if it was an old boyfriend, I presume he was quite young, you become very aware of your own mortality and you start to, and you're an overachiever, you've got overachiever syndrome, and now you're going, oh fuck, I might die young. Shit, now I've got even less time than I thought. So the brain is going, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, we're going to die soon and we've got to do all these things so that we can achieve the holy grail of parental approval before we die. Kind of sad when you frame it in those terms, but that's probably getting close to the reality of what's going on with you at an internal level. Now, either that will sit with you and you'll think, that is bullshit, I don't know why I wasted my time with your question, or you'll think, yeah, that resonates with me and it makes sense. There's another point we need to come back to in a moment. When you said that I might be feeling angry about something, I know I'm angry with my mum, okay, and some stupid boys who sexually assaulted me at a house party at school, okay. But when you said I might be sad or grieving, I started crying instantly. It was instant, though I don't feel like I'm grieving. There's definitely a whole load of fear around death for me, more so than anyone else I've met and talked to about it. You don't know what other people are feeling about death, because they're not going to fucking tell you. People will tell you their most intimate sexual experiences before they'll discuss money. Or their genuine feelings about death with you, and they'll just fob you off. They'll be like, I don't want to talk about death because it makes me feel creepy and weird, and I don't want to die, so let's pretend I don't care. Meh, if I die, I die. When your time's up, your time's up. They're not really, you're not really communicating with them about it, so you don't know. You are angry with your mum, though I don't feel like I'm grieving. There's definitely a whole load of fear around death for me. You are grieving. You're grieving the loss of these people in your life, and you're grieving the loss of your childhood, which you weren't given the chance to be a child properly, and you weren't raised in a truly loving, supportive environment, and as such you never really had the chance to be a child. You had to learn to grow up quicker than you should have done in order to survive psychologically and emotionally in the toxic environment in which you were raised. So you're grieving for that, you're grieving for these people, and you're grieving for lost time, but you are grieving. You're very, very angry. You're more angry than you really realise. You say you're angry with your mum. You're enraged, white hot rage with your mum. And with therapy and awareness and maybe some Zen-like mindfulness and some kindness directed at yourself, you can work that stuff out. You can let it go. I know you can. I've done it myself. Stuff that I thought I'd never let go of in this lifetime, I've managed to let go of within the last 2-3 years. And you do feel a lot better for it. Trust me, you don't know how nice life can feel, because when you've lived with pain your entire life, you don't know you're in pain. You don't know you're walking around. Like, externally, you're all happy and fine and you look good, but internally you can be a real mess. And it's not until somebody comes along and takes it away you go, oh, right, oh, I've had this crushing chest pain and sense of anxiety my entire life, and now it's gone. That feels lovely. Okay, let's talk about sadness. Anger and sadness are two sides of the same coin. That's how I was in actually paid for therapy, I don't like to rely on therapists too much. I try and... I saw Nicola, the woman I spoke about earlier, for 3 sessions in 2010. And I was at that point, I was like, I'm going to be... Because I've had clients. And I was like, fucking hell, some of my clients are pain in the arse. They're unhelpable. And I was like, I'm going to be the best client I can be. I am going to put my ego to one side. Forget everything I think I know about psychology because I'm not helping myself. These are the results I've got in my life. This is the life I'm living. So forget the fact, NLP, psychology, very clever, well done, yes, but your life is still fucked, so humble yourself. So I was like, okay, whilst I might know this stuff, obviously it's not working for me. So I said to myself, whatever she tells me to do, I'm going to do. I'm not saying you should do this with me. I'm telling you what I did, and there's a point to this. You shouldn't do this with me because we're not in therapy together and I haven't seen you face to face. So everything that I say here are ideas for you to work with. So I humbled myself and I said, I'm going to do whatever this woman tells me to do. If she tells me I need to do Native American rain dancing and beat a drum for 6 hours and go into a meditative trance and then skywalk with my spirit angel, I'm going to fucking try it. I'll try anything. Because I wanted to exhaust all the possibilities. She didn't ask me to do that, as it goes. But what I found was a huge wellspring of anger. Not very surprising for a guy who dedicates his life to teaching people how to fight. In the first part of my working life, I spent most of my time doing nightclub security, being a doorman or a bouncer. Now I teach people how to fight. My website is called Street Fight Secrets. It's all very angry and masculine and aggressive and I love it. I really do. But on the flip side of that anger is a massive amount of sadness. Now, she told me that at the time. The reason I went to her is because my anger management was getting ridiculous. I was just cranky all the time. And I was, I busted the fuck out of, like a child. Fucking child. I was, I punched windscreens. Not punched through them. But if you punch a windscreen like 2 or 3 times in a fucking mad rage, you'll crack it. Then you have to have it fixed. So that was expensive. I was killing laptops by headbutting them. I'd just fly into a fucking rage and destroy my own personal shit. So I was like, this is nonsense, it's childish, I'm acting like a kid, and I'm going to get locked up because someday somebody's going to cut in front of me in the queue at Subway and I'm going to murder them in broad daylight. So I went to get the therapy and she said, you know, a lot of this is sadness. And I was like, okay, fine, I'm obviously grieving, sad, whatever. The more, that was 2010, more recently I've started to look at sadness as an emotion. I felt ready to let sadness come up and just look at it as an emotion. There is a Sufi mystic whose name escapes me right now, but he spoke about sadness and he said sadness is actually a beautiful emotion. In the West, we are trained to feel like we should be happy all the time and that sadness is bad, but sadness is not bad. Sadness is very, very healthy. Tears are healthy. The expression of emotion is a healthy thing. And you shouldn't run away from sadness. And I've even noticed it creeping into when I'm talking to people and I'm interacting with people. If somebody says something that previously would have made me angry, I haven't told myself, this is not a cognitive behavioral therapy experiment. I just started doing this. When they say something to me that normally would make me angry, instead, I found myself saying, that's interesting. Kind of makes me sad, but okay. And not like having some big, deep, sincere heart on your sleeve moment with them. Just smile on my face, just going, okay, well, that makes me feel sad that you feel that way. Because actually, that is what I feel. I don't feel angry. I'm not angry with them. I feel sad. I feel sad, you know, somebody, you're a prick, you're this, you're that, the other. Or somebody who says they're going to do something and they don't do it. And they're like, I'm not going to do it, fuck you, what are you going to do? Say, okay, well, that makes me feel sad. But okay. And then you just walk on. It's a very, very freeing experience to just say to yourself or say to other people, or you could try it with your mum. Your mum starts going, oh, we've got no money and I'm going to die and I feel terrible. Just say, wow, I'm sorry to hear that. That makes me feel really sad for you. But okay. It's real difficult for a narcissist to get their claws into you if you don't fight back and you flow with the go of whatever they're saying. You go with the flow and you flow with the go of whatever they're saying. This is the martial arts of psychology now. There is an old saying in Taoism, into a true man of the Tao. Taoism is like an old Chinese system of personal development, spiritual perfection. And if you were a true man or woman of the Tao, it was said, "Into a true man of the Tao, even a tiger cannot sink its claws. Into a true man or woman of Taoism, even a tiger cannot sink its claws." And Taoism is very rooted in the style of Tai Chi, which is very, very soft, usually perceived as a very soft style. And their whole thing is to simply be unavailable for attack. And that manifests physically, and it manifests psychologically, and it manifests spiritually. Just don't be, I'm sorry, like, the shop is closed. We're not available for attack right now. I'm not available to get involved in emotional drama with you right now. It takes training to be that detached, but it feels very good if you can do it. I can't do it all the time, but when I can do it, it feels great. That was incredibly long. We just did YouTube therapy, dude. High five. It is nice. Sorry for the essay. Thanks again. You really are great at what you do. Well, here's to you, lady. I'm not going to say your name for the purposes of anonymity. And I hope that it helped, and you can give me some feedback. And if anybody else got anything else out of that, or has any advice even, then please post it in the comments section below. Keep it sensible and keep it helpful, please. Thank you for your time, and I will speak to you soon.